for joining us this weekend on Hoosier Ag This Week. We're ready to run down the latest news in Indiana and U.S. agriculture. I'm farm broadcaster Eric Pfeiffer from Hoosier Ag Today. On today's show, we'll hop from the Indiana State House to Washington, D.C. to Louisville, Kentucky, with updates on policy and patronage announcements. We'll also head to the field, figuratively, of course. It's still too cold to actually do any planting, but we'll talk about planting soybeans. How early is too early? The Indiana Farm Forecast with Chief Meteorologist Ryan Martin is coming up, and Andy Eubank looks back at the week that was in the grain markets in just a few minutes, and CJ Miller will join us on today's show as well. Let's begin in downtown Indianapolis, where the smell of bacon wafting through the hallowed halls of the Indiana State House led legislators to where farmers were waiting to speak to them about ag policy priorities for corn and soybean growers at the annual Bacon Bar and Brunch event Wednesday morning, presented by the Indiana Corn Growers Association and Indiana Soybean Alliance.
I think bacon puts everybody in a good mood.
That's ICGA President and Hancock County farmer Chris Cherry. The event was very well attended.
Shoulder to shoulder, all the senators and representatives that are out here, their aides. It's a great morning to be out here. I had my local representative, Ethan Lawson. He told me that he's new out here. This is his first year, but he said he can already tell that this is probably the favorite event because he said the turnout for this one surpasses any other one that they've had out here so far. And when I'm talking to these guys, it's certainly a highlight for them.
A major talking point at the brunch was Senate Bill 254, a bill providing tax credits to fuel retailers for the sale of higher ethanol blends and the sale of blended biodiesel or renewable biodiesel. It passed the Senate and moved over to the House. Cherry's excited to see the bill move because it's all about moving the pile for corn growers.
You can eat it, you can feed it, or you can burn it. But the biggest way for us to move that pile quicker in the near term is to burn it. And this biofuels tax incentive, it'll save consumers almost $12 million in fuel costs annually.
And it'll add $104 million to Indiana's GDP. Cherry says this bill really is a win-win-win-win.
It's going to increase Indiana corn and soybean farmers' income by almost $118 million annually. And it'll also support about 677 jobs in Indiana annually. So helps the farmer, it helps Indiana, helps your community, you know, it helps to move that pile.
Biofuels have been a hot topic for ag groups and farmers there at the State House. Property tax reform has been as well, and it's been among the top priorities of Governor Mike Braun and several of your state lawmakers. CJ Miller reports now how changes this past week to the bill that would help make it happen has caused quite a stir among your lawmakers at the Indiana State House.
Senate Bill 1, which would cut property taxes for Indiana's home and landowners, has been amended by state senators in the Tax and Fiscal Policy Committee. Republicans on that committee agreed to gut large portions of Braun's proposal, including an annual 3% cap on the growth of property tax bills. Lieutenant Governor Micah Beckwith told Hoosier Ag Today that those amendments to Senate Bill 1 do not provide a sufficient amount of property tax relief for Hoosiers.
What Governor Braun and myself are doing, we got sent here with a mandate to fight for tax relief, specifically property tax relief was the thing we heard more than anything else on the campaign trail for the last year and a half. And that to me is priority one. So we've got to go in and say, listen, our farmers can't continue to have this 26.4% increase of year-to-year property taxes like Farm Bureau just did on their study and showed that. I mean, they can't sustain it. Small farms can't sustain that for very long. So we've got to move now, and now's the time with President Trump doing what he's doing, with, you know, Mike Braun's doing what he's doing, and I think the legislators need to get on board with that as well.
Beckwith says that many local leaders who are complaining about Braun's property tax relief plan are likely the ones who have not been good stewards of taxpayer funds.
I also think there's a mindset problem. The small communities, the first thing you'll hear them say, especially these mayors and, you know, council members, they'll come down here, they'll say, how are we going to replace the revenue if you cut property taxes? And I always say that's the wrong question to be asking. You need to first start by saying, what can we do as a municipality to make sure that we are cutting all the fat away? And then let's talk about what you need at that point. They just want to kind of keep living high on the hog, and everyone's saying, oh no, we've grown government. We've created government jobs. We've built more bureaucracy. Now we got to keep paying for it. or we got to cut it. And the only those are the only two options, either tax more or cut it. And Governor Braun and myself, we are not okay with taxing more. So it has to be cuts.
You can hear Lieutenant Governor Beckwith's full conversation with Hoosier Ag Today's Eric Pfeiffer as part of the latest episode of the Indiana Ag Policy Podcast. You can check it out at HoosierAgToday.com or wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Thank you, CJ. We actually did that podcast from the State House at the annual Bacon Bar and Brunch I was just telling you about a few moments ago. Chris Cherry is on the podcast, Lieutenant Governor Beckwith on the podcast, and we also spoke with the only full-time farmer in the Indiana Senate, Daryl Schmidt. Again, check it out. It's in the free Hoosier Ag Today mobile app as well. And now we'll take a quick hop, skip, and a jump from the Indiana State House to Washington, D.C., where Brooke Rollins is now officially the new Secretary of the U.S. Department of Agriculture. A 72-28 vote in the U.S. Senate confirmed Rollins on Thursday. All Republican senators, including Todd Young and Jim Banks from Indiana, voted to confirm Rollins. You can read more on this at HoosierAgToday.com. The Indiana Farm Forecast is on the way, as well as more farm news. But right now, let's turn our attention to the markets. Let's welcome in Andy Eubank.
Thanks, Eric. And going into a three-day weekend, no markets on Monday for President's Day. Everything was up. We'll have the settlements coming up. First market analysis, I checked in with Brian Basting for that. Brian is with Advanced Trading. Wheat was the leader, and that was based on better demand hopes, also some production concerns all around the world. But buying for all three, corn, beans, and wheat. And Brian, it was a solid day. A number of factors at play. Detail those for us.
Well, thanks for having me, Andy. We're in the middle of February here, and in the old days as such, it would be a quiet time in the markets, but not so in 2025. There's just a lot of moving pieces here as we get ready to enter the second half of the month. We're looking at, of course, a very strong weather market taking place in South America. We're looking at corn that's pollinating, as you and I speak here, in Argentina. USDA did lower Argentina's corn production by 1 million tons this week. We're looking at uncertain short-term forecasts. Some forecasts are getting cooler and wetter. Others are saying that we're going to have a more of a return to hot weather. I'm moving to that last week in February. So it's not a done deal either way with the crop size. It may not be the catastrophic event that they had 2 years ago where we really saw a short crop of both corn and beans, but it certainly doesn't feel like it was 60 days ago in terms of potential there. We've also got uncertainty regarding the Black Sea region. Obviously, a lot going on there now. Uncertainty about Russia, as you and I speak, Andy, in terms of their crop size for 25. We don't want to make or break a crop in the middle of February. But until we get indications that that crop is on stronger ground, Russia may take a more conservative approach to the export market here for the next few months.
Market commentary from Brian Basting of Advanced Trading. Brian's number 309-664-2314. Now the settlements from Friday trade. March corn up 2 3/4, 496 1/4. May contract goes to 508 3/4, also up 2 3/4. July up 2 1/4, 511 1/4. 6 cents higher on the March beans, 1036. May contract 1052. 2 3/4, up 1 3/4. July up 1 1/4 at 1068 1/4. And again, leading the way all day, wheat. March wheat, $6 even at the close, 22 1/4 higher. May, 613 1/2, up 21 1/2 cents. The meats were mostly lower. April live cattle, 194.25, down 227, and a half dollar down on the April lean hogs, 92.60. Again, no markets on Monday, closed for President's Day. Plenty more still to come, though, on the weekend show. I'm Andy Eubank. This is Hoosier Ag This Week.
Keystone Cooperative's equipment auction continues this February on Purple Wave. Bid on a 2015 John Deere R4038 applicator, fertilizer delivery trucks, and more farm-ready machinery. With no reserve online auctions, top quality equipment from Indiana, Ohio, and Michigan is just a click away. Visit purplewave.com today, your trusted farm auction solution. Purple Wave, where smart farmers find the perfect fit.
It's too good to be kept a secret. The Hoosier Ag Today email newsletter. Every weekday morning, it gives you the latest news that's important to Indiana agriculture, plus a review of the farm markets and a customized weather forecast that's just for Indiana. It's free. It's in your email box every morning. Tell your friends, tell your neighbors, tell your employees to sign up for the Hoosier Ag Today email newsletter at HoosierAgToday.com and the Hoosier Ag Today mobile app.
Got a very active precipitation weekend. I'm Chief Meteorologist Ryan Martin with Hoosier Ag Today's weekend weather outlook. And let me tell you, not the nicest set of weather conditions here across the Hoosier State. Now, let's start with good news, all right? The good news is it is warmer today than what we saw yesterday or even back into Thursday after we cleared out following the prior weather event. So warmer air is here. Bad news, warmer air is not going to stay. And secondary bad news, this warmer air is also being accompanied by lots of moisture. We have a weather system coming up from the central and lower Mississippi River Valley, spreading rain into the Hoosier State today. This after an upper level system moved out of the Wisconsin area into the Great Lakes overnight, triggering some light snow and flurry action up north. So everybody's getting some precipitation, rain, maybe a little bit of ice possible today, but I don't think so much, and wet snow. And then we've got a secondary wave of moisture that wants to come through overnight tonight into tomorrow. I think at the end of this, we're looking at snow that can be anywhere from 1 to 3 or 4 inches across the Hoosier State, depending on where you're at. Biggest totals may end up being in the central to slightly northern parts of the state. Big rains are possible down south, 2 inches or more when you get close to the Ohio River. And then we're going to be seeing a very thin area of ice. I just don't think ice is a big deal. It's probably more of an issue over in Ohio, and even there, not a big talking point right now. So that's good. We escaped with no ice, but definitely seeing plenty of moisture around, and behind this weather system, significantly colder air comes in. We'll feel that on Sunday as precipitation ends as snow, but that cold wants to sit here through most of next week. Monday and Tuesday, bitterly cold here, but I think we see some sunshine as Arctic high pressure is in control. We've got a weather system trying to kick out of the Central Plains as we move from Tuesday into Wednesday, moving across the Missouri Valley, but currently the low seems to want to track a little bit farther south, down through Mississippi, Alabama, Georgia. And if it does go that far south, I am less concerned about big time precipitation potential here. I'm going to right now say we have to watch for snow potential for both Wednesday and Thursday, but the track may limit that to either or neither of those days. So a lot of things to pay attention to. We'll dive back into it on Monday and see what the latest track update is. But that's what we're watching for midweek next week. If we don't get the snow, unfortunately, that still means we are quite cold. If the low is tracking well far south, that means cold, high pressure is pushing it that way. So very cold to finish the week. Some of the coldest air of the last several weeks for sure. And then we get into the weekend of the 22nd, 23rd, starting to see signs of temperature moderation. We warm up big time for the week of the 24th. I'm Ryan Martin.
Micro Essentials S10 from the Mosaic Company delivers uniform nutrient distribution. Every single granule contains nitrogen, phosphorus, and sulfur. Micro Essentials has superior nutrient distribution when compared to MAP or DAP blends. This means your crop does not have to search for those nutrients, improving nutrient uptake. Choose a superior phosphorus fertilizer with Micro Essentials. Contact your local ag retailer to learn more.
We are back on Hoosier Ag This Week. Thanks for sticking around. I'm Eric Pfeiffer from Hoosier Ag Today. If you've heard Purdue Extension soybean specialist Sean Castile speak before, you've definitely heard him talk about timely soybean planting.
We definitely need to be thinking about it in the April period. We have soil temperatures that are marking around that 50-degree mark and looking to go up.
That is soybean Sean Castile explaining on the latest Purdue Crop Chat podcast that there is a big difference between early planting and timely planting. The podcast is available now on the free Hoosier Ag Today mobile app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
I know that there's plenty that push it a little bit even earlier than that or more suspect. But in those situations, we've got to make sure that we're getting a stand established. And so if we're going in April just because it's April and the The seed bed is just open seed slots. You can live with it if you get timely rains, but if you don't, boy, that is just going to follow you all season long.
He says when he gets texts from farmers or other agronomists about their March planted beans, he often replies with something like,
"That's okay, my beans haven't lost their stand yet, they're still in the bag."
His counterpart at Ohio State is conducting research about early planted soybeans.
March is definitely early. April, it can be early, it can be timely, depends on the field conditions, but she's got some March beans that were really, really struggling because of stand establishment, the cold temperatures, the frost freeze. I think stand establishment, it was crazy low in the, I don't know, 40, 50,000, something like that. So I want a good stand. You got to have plants out there. Obviously, beans can branch and make up a lot of ground, but well, that at least gives them a fighting chance to get a fairly uniform stand and emergence.
You can hear more from soybean Sean Castile and Dan Corn Quinn, Purdue Extension corn specialist, in the Purdue Crop Chat podcast. It's available now wherever you listen to podcasts. You can also find it in the free Hoosier Ag Today mobile app. Just search Hoosier Ag Today in your app store. Farm Credit Mid-America is celebrating another large return to their customer owners as part of their annual patronage program. C.J. Miller has more as he visited Louisville, Kentucky in the National Farm Machinery Show earlier this week.
We are excited to announce that this year we are going to give over $260 million back in patronage to our member owners.
And that's Natasha Cox, Senior Vice President of Agricultural Lending for Farm Credit Mid-America. The announcement was made to coincide with the start of the National Farm Machinery Show in Louisville.
We've been doing this for 9 years now, and we've given back over $1.5 billion to our member owners.
And when will those patronage payments be delivered to their customer owners?
Those are going to hit our customers the end of March. And so I'll be honest with you, it couldn't come at a better time. When we look at the economic cycles in agriculture, the timing that we're able to get this money in the hands of our member owners to help them execute on their strategies, but also help them through some volatility in the market, we are just very, very excited to be able to give back on behalf of our member owners.
She adds that she and her team can help you with your farm financing options for 2025 and beyond.
We understand that there's a lot of noise going on in the industry right now. We look forward to sitting down with you about the opportunities that you have in front of you. If you need support, whether it be crop insurance, long-term or short-term financial products that you need from us, we're here to serve you. Come see us at the local Farm Credit office.
Find your local Farm Credit Mid-America office and read more about their patronage program at FCMA.com. You can also find out more at HoosierAgToday.com. I'm C.J. Miller.
We all saw the headlines about record prices for farmland not that long ago. Where are farmland prices trending now? Howard Halderman is president of Halderman Real Estate and Farm Management.
So farmland values peaked all-time high based upon our data in 2022. That was also the best farm income year in the U.S. history. So it stands to reason that we saw high values then. We've declined maybe 2-3% off that all-time high, and 23, 24, and 25 have been very consistent values, very steady over the last 3 years.
Halderman says that as it stands now, steady is the theme as we move ahead in 2025.
We're not moving up significantly in value, but we're also not declining. Friends of ours in the Western Corn Belt are actually seeing some declines, maybe 5 or 10%. We're not seeing that yet in the Eastern Corn Belt.
If we were to see some movement, either to the upside or the downside, Halderman explains what would be behind that move.
So right now, interest rates are one factor, and I don't think they move much. I think interest rates are probably going to be staying pretty stable to where they are, from what I hear.
So it would come down to farm incomes, both the yield and the price.
I think it's going to come down heavily weighted on commodity prices. Maybe yields to some degree, but assuming an average yield, which is all we can do here February 1st, you're looking at what commodity prices do. And I think that's going to be the biggest influence as we go over the next 90 to 180 days.
You can find upcoming auctions and property listings at Halderman.com. More now from Louisville and the National Farm Machinery Show. You know, when you walk around the floor there, you find all sorts of big, beautiful new farm equipment. But C.J. Miller, in true journalistic fashion, was there and wanted to know if farmers are still lining up to buy the brand new machinery. CJ?
At the show, I spoke with Leo Bowes. He's the harvesting marketing lead with Case IH. as he shared with me some of the ways that Case IH has had to reevaluate their operations over the past several years.
You know, from the pandemic era, the supply chain, that probably as a manufacturer allowed us to maybe look at sourcing in general, as well as where parts were coming from. So that allowed us to maybe look at efficiencies, not only here in the United States, but maybe abroad as well.
In spite of the recent downturn of the ag economy, Bo says the producers are still inquiring about their new equipment.
What producers are asking, they want to see the bottom line benefits, whether it be a new piece of equipment or used. What is it going to do to their efficiency on the farm? And is that going to allow them to cover more acres in less time, allowing them maybe to apply less inputs based on variable rate technology? So when you look at all of those that stack up, I think customers still would make a purchasing decision based on maybe what the need would be and ultimately their bottom line for their farm.
Check out more of my conversation with Leo Bowes from Case IH at the National Farm Machinery Show in Louisville at HoosierAgToday.com. I'm CJ Miller.
And I'm Eric Pfeiffer. More Hoosier Ag this week. On the way shortly, hear from Hoosier Ag Today, Indiana's Farm Network.
Ag Bioscience, the number one ag tech podcast globally, is now available on video. Hear the latest from innovators in food, animal health, plant science, ag tech, and agriculture.
Are you open for business on your farm? And are you well positioned to do that? Not just financially, but with the technology that you have available and those that are surrounding you in partnership. And so really being able to pivot into new spaces is important for the agribusinesses that we serve and the farmers that we serve as well. What you got you here won't get you there. And I think that that's something that we have to be very mindful of the fruit of our labors have got us here. We think about the speed of change in agriculture and some of the major things that have happened. And some would say, actually, you know, in the past 100 years, agriculture changed somewhat slowly for a good while. And then here we are today, and the pace of change is somewhat radical.
Get more episodes online at agrinovisindiana.com. Click on podcasts. Also available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Thank you again for joining us here on Hoosier Ag This Week. I'm CJ Miller with Hoosier Ag Today, and all this coming week, we celebrate National FFA Week. And while we shine the spotlight on it this week, FFA members are experiencing personal and professional developments all year long. Eric Pfeiffer joins us now as he shares how one Indiana company is building off of that professional development to help build their workforce.
Sarah Morehouse with Keystone explains their SEED program, which stands for Securing Experience and Employee Development.
The whole entire goal of the SEED program is to hire students right out of high school that are not interested in post-secondary education, but have a passion for agriculture. And so they come into our program with Keystone. They are in rotations. They go through all of our divisions. And at the end of it, then we sit down and figure out how we can keep them for the rest of their career.
Eliza Ulitsny is a current Keystone SEED professional going through the different rotations, which includes their grain, energy, agronomy, swine and animal nutrition, and corporate office divisions. In speaking with new SEED applicants this week, Ulitsny told them how truly unique this opportunity is.
There's nothing like this out there. It's one-of-a-kind experience and really sets people up to succeed. I mean, there's no way that you can get in this program and fail. That is not what they want us to do at all. So there is nothing that you can do to not succeed when you're in this program. So I would highly encourage anyone to join it.
Morehouse explains why they recruit FFA members for the SEED program.
Not only is it about your experience in agriculture, but FFA teaches those lifelong skills that we're looking for our SEED professionals. Passion, work ethic, communications. And so like Eliza is doing a great job, obviously. And so FFA instills those things into these different applicants, and we're just really excited to be a part of it.
Applications for this year are currently closed, but keep an eye out for those to open again soon. Hear more from Eliza about how FFA prepared her for the SEED program in the Full Hat interview at HoosierAgToday.com. I'm Eric Pfeiffer.
And since Monday is President's Day, we thought we'd take a look back at President Ronald Reagan and how much he left a tremendous impact on the ag industry. I recently spoke with an Indiana ag leader who shared what it was like to meet President Reagan at the White House more than 40 years ago.
I know things have been rough and still are for many farmers, but I hope when you go back to your homes, you'll tell your families and your friends that America's farmers are not going to be left out of the good times that lie ahead.
That was President Reagan in July 1983, delivering those remarks in the White House Rose Garden to the National FFA. Standing just within feet of the president during that speech was Bruce Kettler. Kettler is now president and CEO of the Agribusiness Council of Indiana. At the time, Kettler was serving as National FFA Eastern Region Vice President from Ohio, and he got the chance to meet President Reagan at the White House, not once, but twice.
It was really neat. We met him in December after we were elected in November, met him in the Oval Office. And I just remember at the time the gentle nature of him as a person. He was very interested in learning and understanding and knowing more about FFA and what we were interested in accomplishing in our year as national officers. And then in July of the following year, July of 1983, during State President's Conference, we met with him in the Rose Garden. And we had an opportunity to be able to learn from him there.
When Reagan first became president, more American farmers were losing their farms than at any time since the Great Depression of the 1930s.
And keep in mind, for farming in particular, at that time, the early to mid-80s, were a very, very difficult time. I mean, there were a lot of people that grew up on farms that I think would certainly want to have gone back to the farm, but knew that with the high prices, high inflation, that wasn't going to be a reality for them.
Reagan established a number of economic policies that supported America's ag industry, including the need for sustained credit and cash flow to farmers, as well as pushing for increased exports for America's ag products. Kettler adds that Reagan not only supported the American farmer, but future farmers as well.
What I've always appreciated about him as a president was he understood the importance of two things, food and agriculture and youth. And he really appreciated what FFA could do to develop the youth that would then go serve in food and agriculture and, of course, other areas as well. But he knew that, and he had a good appreciation for it, which he was able to share with us.
During that speech that Kettler witnessed back in 1983, President Reagan gave this parting message to the FFA and America's farmers.
Remember that back at the time the ideals of our nation emerged, it was composed overwhelmingly of men and women who made their living from the land. Today we rely on you to maintain our ties to the land and to live up to our ideals, and I know you won't let us down.
Read more about President Reagan's impact on the ag industry at HoosierAgToday.com. And with that, it's time to put a big old bow on this week's edition of Hoosier Ag This Week. Download the podcast version. It's at HoosierAgToday.com. From our award-winning team of Eric Pfeiffer, Andy Eubank, and our chief meteorologist, Ryan Martin, I'm CJ Miller, Hoosier Ag Today, Indiana's Farm Network.